Please note that this episode contains discussions around the Bradford City Stadium fire of 1985, which some listeners may find distressing. Hi, I'm Mel Pickup, Chief Executive of Bradford Teaching Hospitals, and welcome to this month's episode of our podcast series. In each episode, I sit down with colleagues and partners from across the Trust and the wider community to learn more about their work and the impact it has on the people of Bradford. Today, we're reflecting on a pivotal moment in Bradford's history, the Bradford City Stadium fire of May 1985, and hearing the first-hand experience of a nurse who responded to the tragedy. I'm joined today by Angela O'Neill, who was a 21-year-old enrolled nurse at the time and found herself at the heart of the hospital's response. Now a semi-retired nurse, Angela still dedicates time to the NHS and brings her wealth of experience in trauma and orthopaedics. But before we speak to Angela, we're going to hear the recollections of Matthew Wildman, the last surviving person to be pulled out of the stadium fire. Matthew was just 17 years old on that day in 1985.
May the 11th was the pinnacle of the year that had built up to that day, and it seemed like the weather and everything had been booked to make the day really special. So it was glorious sunshine. There couldn't be a better weather forecast. The match may have started at 3 o'clock, but Valley Parade was full by about midday. People just couldn't wait to go down and join in the celebrations. It was just going to be one great big party. And we already knew that the team was going to parade the trophy around before the match, which is unusual, but, you know, they just couldn't wait to share it with everybody. And it just put everybody in the right frame of mind for enjoying themselves for the afternoon. It was a special team that played really, really well together. It was enjoyable to watch them play, and they'd won the league the week before. So it was more of a celebration than a football match, if anything. It was coming up to half time when there was something wrong. I was the same as everybody else. You couldn't believe it was happening, so it took a while for it to sink in. So, especially seeing as a fire catches fire as quickly as it can, regardless of the fact that that wooden stand was built in a way that a fire would start and it could start quickly, it took over everybody. Everybody was dumbfounded while it was happening, completely taken by surprise. I escaped from my seating into the back corridor, which was a bad move. The smoke started to come in and around. You know, we were very close to where the fire started. And as people started to cough and choke, I'm smaller than others, so I was pushed to the floor, which was a good thing for me because I could breathe underneath people. But that was where I was going to stay. But somebody who was looking for his son tripped over me and decided to lift me up and help me, but told me I had to go back into the main stand and start going out the other way. But of course, we had an upper tier, a lower tier, and the paddock before the field. So he took me down the upper tier and lifted me over into the lower tier and wished me on my way while he went to find his son. So I got to the next wall, and that was the lower tier down to the paddock. There was an 8-foot drop to concrete. So I pondered for a while. But then I looked at the wall in front of me, which was bubbling up because of the heat. I then looked at my hands on the wall, and the skin was bubbling up because of the heat. So that focused my mind. I had to go over the wall regardless. So I shouted out, threw myself over the wall, and David Hustler, who was out on the field, he'd rescued lots of people already. Everybody was out who was going to get out of the fire. But he heard me scream. He said later that he couldn't live with himself if he'd have remembered that without doing anything. So how he managed to leapfrog the outer paddock wall and run across the paddock and catch me in the time it took for me to drop just 8 foot and stop me hitting the concrete, I have no idea. Then he pulled us both over the last wall and dragged us back onto the pitch. By the time I got out of the fire and got onto an ambulance, Bradford was full. And I ended up at Batley General for the night. And of course, it was a small local hospital that virtually closed for the day and then reopened and called everybody back in to help, and they all did the very best they could. Batley coped as well as they could and got us all off to St. Luke's the next day. Obviously, St. Luke's were already gearing themselves up, clearing wards and setting up just to deal with what needed to be dealt with. The senior plastic surgeon was away on holiday, so Professor David Sharp stood up and took control and responded to offers from all around the country for other plastic surgeons to come and help him. One of the things about burns, of course, is that you have a very limited time frame to help people. It has to be treated as quickly as possible. One of the biggest problems is dehydration, because fluids are coming out of your body quicker than they're going back in. So they had to act quickly. And the fact that, you know, him and his team had the wherewithal to think, you know, what needs to be done and how they're going to do it, getting on with it, was just remarkable. To be honest, that they did such a good job with me with regard to my burns. Obviously, I have other ailments, and it was through not being able to walk very well that I struggled to get out of the fire in the first place. But with regard to the burns, they did such a great job with me that I've more or less been able to be put in a position where I can take care of myself. I'll be eternally grateful for the things that they had to do. Basically, they operated on me every other day. So, you know, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, and so on. I would have a day off, and then we'd be back in surgery again. One day, I had four teams working on me all at the same time, one on each arm, one on each leg, with all the work that needed to be done with regard to burns and plastic surgery. So, obviously, all these things that they did, It was out of necessity. We can't do this traditionally with what we, so we'll think of something else. And they did. And their quick thinking kept me alive. And all the things that they brought together made them realise that they needed to form and progress the burns unit, which of course, you know, is still going today, 40 years on, share what they've learnt and what they continue to learn with the rest of the world for the good of mankind.
So, welcome, Angela. To start with, can you take us back to the moment you first found out about the fire and what were you doing at the time?
Well, at the time, I was a relatively newly qualified. I'd just been qualified almost a year. I was trying to save up for my own house, so I was still living in the nurse's home. And I'd gone down on just after lunch on the Saturday to check my post, and the internal phone was ringing, which it sort of puzzled me a little bit at first. But then I thought, oh, well, I better answer it. So, of course, it was one of the nursing officers at the time that said there'd been a major incident down at Bradford City, and could I get as many off-duty nurses as I could from the nurses' home and go down to A&E.
So you were just qualified, but you weren't, or were you an A&E nurse? Did you?
No, I worked on the orthopaedic and trauma ward, because obviously all those years back, I'm showing my age now, but we still nursed people on traction. So yeah, we had three trauma wards. And so when I went back into work, obviously they were able to take all the admissions in at St. Luke's, where the plastics used to be based at that time. And plus we had people that had been trying to get out from underneath the turnstiles, because the turnstiles wouldn't turn. Mm. And some people had got trampled, so they'd like broken ankles and broken wrists. So we had to deal with them as well. So,
I mean, had you done some A&E in your training to be an adult nurse? So you weren't even that familiar with the department, the layout of it, and the people that you were working with on that day?
No, I'd sort of been through A&E on one day, I think we'd done, but my A&E experience was actually one of the trauma wards in my training, and then went back there I'd qualified.
So you'd not really encountered injuries, burns in particular, like that before.
No.
Gosh, that must have been an enormous shock.
It was. Going down towards A&E, it was like, oh my God, the smell of the fire and the burning flesh was just unbelievable, really. So we hurtled into A&E and was met with have seen to an untrained eye would probably look like chaos, but it was organized. It was very organized chaos. And we were sent to what used to be the physio gym. They'd set that up for the hand burns that and for people that didn't need admitting immediately, but obviously needed attending to there and then. Considering we didn't have mobiles and things then as well, the amount of off-duty nurses that all came in, and everybody, I don't know, it was just amazing really, because everybody just pulled together. And obviously there were senior doctors and nurses that were doing the coordinating. And considering the enormity of what had happened, although it did look a bit chaotic, it really wasn't. There were people just directing everybody where they needed to be. So everybody really worked together, and the camaraderie were just, it was absolutely brilliant. It was just amazing. And even the patients, the victims, they were kind of so grateful. But even just to have that camaraderie with them as well. And they were so grateful for everybody coming in. And yeah, I mean, it's an experience, obviously, I will never, ever, ever forget.
So when I was a student nurse, I was a third year on my placement in A&E in Barnsley. And it was the day of the Hillsborough disaster. And that sense of camaraderie, like you've just described, I remember looking down the sort of the main corridor where all the patients would ordinarily come in on ambulances, and seeing consultant surgeon after consultant surgeon all lined up, all prepped, all ready, all waiting to receive those injured people. That will, like you say, stay with you.
It's just amazing how people in those situations just come together,
well,
don't they?
I mean, we practice this, don't we? We kind of plan for it meticulously.
Yeah.
We practice it and we do all of these things in the hope that we never have to do it.
Yes.
But it's reassuring and comforting for the public and for all of us to appreciate that that practice and that preparation is for a very valid reason. And when you have to, it does work and you can do what you need to do.
Yeah.
To help save as many lives as possible. Heaven forbid that ever happens
again.
Just going back, Angela, that must have been a very, very long day. What time did you kind of get back to your accommodation?
I think it was, I'm not just sure what time we got actually down to A&E, and that's a bit of a blur, but getting back, it was about 7 o'clock, I think, when we finally returned to the nurses' home. And it wasn't until afterwards, it was like, oh my goodness me, what just happened?
Now, of course, the response that we would have if we had something like that, from my point of view as the chief exec, we'd be very much minded to be checking in with the people who've been involved on the front line and giving them psychological and emotional support. Yeah. I'm just thinking about my time around the Hillsborough period, which is a little bit later than this was, but I'm not sure that we were geared up for much of that.
We didn't get anything like that. We just got on with it. Once I went back to work, we still had some of the burns victims on the ward that I was employed on at the time, and some of the orthopaedic injuries we dealt with as well. But and I think the support, really, it wasn't an official support, but we kind of as nurses just supported each other. And I think we got through it by talking about our own experiences with each other around that time, and that's kind of how we coped with it.
And do you get to see some of the people that were in the hospital at that time and working alongside you, or
some of the girls that I worked with at the time? I'm still in contact with, like on Facebook or on, you know, messaging, but we haven't seen each other for quite a long time now. And we keep threatening in the way, doesn't it? And it's difficult sometimes to sort out when everybody's free.
But it's amazing, you know, I do this on occasion. You get back with the people that you trained with or you worked with, or you went through something like this with, and it's almost like you were back there immediately. Yeah. You know, the memories are really vivid, especially when they are kind of so imprinted probably on your brain. How did it affect you?
I think at the time, when you're kind of young, you do take a lot of things in your stride. And I think sometimes it's not always until later on in life when something happens and you think, you kind of pull on the resources and you sort of think, actually, when that happened, this is what we did. And then you can relay that into what you're dealing with now. So you can take positives out of the negative situation that happened. And I think throughout my career, really, you know, when I've been in sort of stressful situations, I do think back to that time. I think, well, we dealt with it and this is how we dealt with it. And let's just do it again.
It's quite a watermark, isn't it? In your career. And I think if you kind of use that and say, well, if I could deal with that on that particular day and get through it. There isn't much more that can be worse than that. Is it something that you took into your future career then? Because how many years have you worked here now?
43
wow.
this week.
43
years since I started my training, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I've always worked at Bradford. I've always stayed.
Yeah.
Stayed in Bradford. I did 9 years on the trauma as an enrolled nurse, and then I took a year's leave of absence to do my conversion course, because Bradford at the time was funding the 2-year course, and I was kind of at a stage where I was sort of thinking about starting a family. So I didn't really, but I were a bit pig-headed then, I think, really, and I didn't want to do 2 years. So I funded myself to do the 52-week course, but I did it on a leave of absence so that I knew I had a job, obviously, to come back to, because I had a mortgage and everything then, so...
So that was to convert from an enrolled nurse to a registered nurse.
Yeah.
And when you faced challenges then, later on in your career, did you ever find yourself drawing on what you'd lived through that particular day? Because, you know, 43 years worth of career in the NHS, you must have faced some really difficult challenges.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always certain things that happen throughout your career and that stay with you. And, yeah, there have been times when, particularly when you become a ward manager, as I did for quite a few years, and things happen and it's like... You do draw on previous experiences, and that is one experience that, like I've said, you know, you think, oh gosh, this is happening. Take a step back, and you do find yourself going back to that thing, and this is what we did, so let's just do it again, and it works.
Mm. And most of that was in trauma orthopaedics. So what drew you into that particular specialty?
When I first qualified, I actually wanted to work at St. Luke's, but the only job that was on offer at the time was nights. And I'd found through my training, I couldn't sleep. I'm not a big sleeper anyway, so I couldn't sleep through the day. So I was like, oh, that was about the only thing really that I didn't want to do. Because then in those days, you had your day staff and your night staff. They were two separate entities kind of thing. So they referred me up to BRI, and the job that was sort of offered to me at the time was trauma and orthopaedics. So I was perfectly happy to, you know, I'd enjoyed my experience on the trauma ward as a placement. So I was quite happy to go there. Once you get into it, it's like, it's one of those disciplines that you either love it or you hate it. And I loved it. That feeling of like putting people back together. was what kind of drew me to it.
Just thinking back, is there anybody that you remember, any patients that you remember distinctly and ever think, I wonder what happened to them?
There was one gentleman that had burnt both his hands that I dressed in the gym down in the A&E, and I can see his face right in front of me. He was so lovely, and he kept saying, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, I'm really sorry that I'm like, what? Don't apologise. It's not your fault. You know, we're here to look after you. And, oh, it's just amazing that all these people have come in to help us. And we just kind of clicked. And I do often think about him. And then there was a couple of patients that we had on the ward that were both trauma patients, because one had a broken ankle, one had a broken wrist trying to get out, but they'd also been burnt, you know, hands burnt and a little bit on the heads because you know, trying to get out, they'd put the hands on the heads. And they were sort of the same calibre, you know, they were just so lovely and so appreciative of what everybody had done for them. And all the emergency services, not just the nurses and the doctors, the ambulance crews, the fire crews and everybody that came together. And I do often think about them, 43 years on, you do, and wonder what happened to them.
Yeah. So I remember when I did orthopaedic training as a student, I didn't work as a registered nurse in orthopaedics, but the Bradford sling...
Yes.
The Bradford sling was the device that elevated people after surgery. And it wasn't until really I came to Bradford, only about 5 years ago, that I understood exactly where the origins of the Bradford sling that's used everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of developed. It kind of within 48 hours of the sort of first prototype came out, and obviously it developed a little bit and improved over the time, but... You know, to say that we're still using it 40 years on is testament to its worthy of, you know, like elevating limbs and things. Swelling can't come out of the end of your fingers. It has to go back up your arm and out through your heart. So it's, you know, you can have it as high or as low as you want. And they're quite a simple thing, really.
Very simple.
And,
But invaluable.
But it works. And 40 years down the line, it's still working and we still use it.
So, Angela, looking back now, all these years later, it's very apparent that those events of 1985 did impact, didn't they?
They did impact on your
career, on you as an individual, perhaps in a negative way because it was emotionally very challenging for you. Mm-hmm. But equally, it feels very much the way that you talk and your passion for what you've continued to do since those times in a positive way.
I think a lot of people at the time did take a lot of positives out of it. You know, things in treatments and, you know, the patients having skin grafts. And again, I think, like you say, we dealt with it. We didn't have support like we do now. But as a team of nurses, everybody took something from it that was positive, even if it's just being able to organise your workload all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah.
There were lots of positives to come out of it.
Angela, thank you so much for sharing your powerful story and reflections with us today. The Bradford City Stadium fire was a defining moment in our city's history, and your experience gives us an insight into the resilience of not just yourself, but other healthcare professionals and the strength of our community. If you'd like to learn more about the history of Bradford Teaching Hospitals and the incredible work of our staff, please visit our website at bradfordhospitals.nhs.uk.